Hello and welcome to D Street Talk podcast powered by Money Control. Well, my name is Shatraj Ananda and today I have with me a very special guest, Santosh Singh, who's a Senior Vice President and Head of Research at Motilal Oswal Asset Management. Welcome to the podcast, Mr. Singh.
Thanks, Chitesh.
Right. Well, the first question I wanted to put across to you is that, sir, what is your take on the interest waiver scheme, which is still a developing story at this point in time, but how will it actually impact the financial and the banking sector?
So, see, firstly, I think what government has filed currently, and whatever we can read from the stories, because still we don't know exactly what government has filed, but what we read from the stories is that government wants to waive off the interest on interest. So it's not talking about interest waiver, it's talking about interest on interest waiver. Mm-hmm. And it is willing to take the hit on the government's balance sheet rather than banks and financial institutions taking the hit on their balance sheet. Mm-hmm. So that way, I would believe that from a banking point of view, it's safe. Definitely it's safe from banking point of view. Mm-hmm. But then the bigger question, which also comes into mind, is about what people, so about the culture, the credit culture. So yes, it's definitely giving some sort of, you can say, because the customers who have not been able to pay their loans, there they are getting a waiver, but what about who have paid the loans? And that is one part, who have not taken moratorium and paid the loan. So that will be another question which needs to be answered, and the impact of it on the credit culture overall. So that is the first part, that overall for the banks, it's going to be actually positive. But on a credit culture side, means it can have an impact. The second part, I would say, in this one, is that the Supreme Court, till the time it doesn't give its decision, I believe they have put the stay on moratorium. Mm-hmm. Now, unless and until they put up a decision here, and then I think it should come fast now, what will happen is people who are not paying will not pay. Because they simply have a view that if they pay, they might not get relief, which might come if they don't pay. So this is where the case needs a solution faster. Whichever way it is, the case needs a solution faster. Mm-hmm. Definitely, the government's affidavit and all should fasten the process. But if it's definitely having an impact on the credit culture of the industry.
Right. And what's your take on the markets? We saw a marginal dip in September, but then October started off on a positive note. And in fact, we are approaching crucial events such as US election, and rise in COVID cases across the globe is something which also needed some bit of attention. And we saw a marginal downtick in the second half of September as well related to. But now I think, in terms of Sensex, we are back again on 39,000, Nifty 50, 11,500. So what is your take on the markets?
So one of the things I keep highlighting about the markets is that today it's a play between liquidity and data. So initially, so liquidity has been so high in the system because of the global infusion of money, as well as in India also a lot of savings things in the hand of people who are not actually the ones who have got their jobs. They are not spending that much and they have got that sort of savings, and that also flowing through to the market, and this time directly. So it's a bit about liquidity and something about data. So that has been driving the market till now. Going forward, my belief is it's going to be based on fundamentals. Okay. And whatever recovery we have seen till now for the overall economy, and that is a fact that when you move from zero, first 50, 60 or 70% is really easy. It's a low-hanging fruit. So we got the low-hanging fruit going to in certain industries even to the extent of 90%. But nowhere we are seeing that we, or most of the industries, we are not seeing that we are getting into the positive territory. So that's one part. That positive territory is still some part away, but we are seeing recovery in a lot of industries. And to me, that's not a surprise, but that's definitely a positive part of it. But how it's going to play out once it reaches 90%, 95%, would it plateau out? If it plateaus out, then we have a problem, because what we need is growth. Market is pricing in growth. So what we need is growth. And if it plateaus out, then it will be a problem. And that's where the slowdown in recovery is having an impact on the market. Now, the second part of the equation is, I have read a lot about V-shape, L-shape. I think there are so many shapes which have been talked about this recovery. So I don't know which shape it will take, but what is very clear that this time, you have to be a lot more sector specific. You can't be sector agnostic. This recovery is not going to be sector agnostic. Certain sectors are going to get a lot of time. Certain sectors will have a neutral impact because of this recovery. And certain sectors, like if you talk about hospitality, tourism, maybe even aviation, it's going to take a very long time before they come back. Even if I talk about theaters and all, it's going to take a very long time before they come back to their full capacity. So it's going to be a lot more sector specific. So we saw that IT as a sector, or healthcare as a sector, had a positive impact. Or maybe to an extent, insurance also had a positive impact. But there are certain parts of the economy where there's going to be huge negative impact. So it's a divided from the middle. So I don't know if that K word is right or whatever word is right, but it's going to be two different paths. With various sectors are going to take three different paths. One on an uptrend, another one on a sort of a neutral stance, and few sectors which are going to be negative. So you have to be really, really worried about which sector you start getting into, because valuations have gone up a lot in most of the sectors.
Rightly put, sir. And in fact, the year 2020 has nothing, short of a volatile year, and so far, in fact, and we touched lifetime high and then 52-week low in a matter of months in the same year. Now, how can conservative investors create wealth by using a multi-asset fund?
So, see, this is one part. I think the difficult part of the question is that certain asset classes, and we have, I think you would have seen over a period of time that we talk about asset classes at different point in time. And different asset classes but my view is that, see, the asset classes have nothing to do with timing. It has to do with the customer. So what customer we are talking about? So this is an asset class which where the customers has got lower risk-taking capacity either, or risk-taking willingness. So lower risk-taking willingness, but at the same point in time, they want slightly superior return than pure debt or pure pure treasury markets. They want a slightly superior return on that. So for those sort of investors, this is a good area to be in, because, and even I can't talk about the markets, but I can talk about what we have done here. So we have actually, one of the things, our multi-asset class has actually done a back testing of 18 years on the asset allocation on which our funds are based on. And what we find is for 18 years, this fund on a rolling 3-year basis never had a negative return. And it has got one of the lowest drawdowns. So definitely it tells you, and the standard deviation was 1/3 of the normal standard deviation of equity. So it definitely tells, what it tells you is that the funds are lesser volatile. But the thing which sometimes happens is that these asset classes also needs to be slightly, when we are talking about sector asset allocation, these asset classes also needs to be a little bit automated. Because what happens is that the personality trait should not play a part in the asset allocation. And if it happens, then the entire reasoning of getting into multiple asset class goes for a toss. Because you can think that the markets are down if you think, and then you start putting a lot into equities rather than debt. So that part gets into trouble. So that's where I think that one part needs to be taken care of. But other than that, this is a good area for people who are looking at lower volatility and slightly superior return than treasury.
Right. And which are the investment bias that investors should be aware of?
Actually, if you look at the history, these are the only biases we have talked about for, I think, even whatever books I have read, which were written 40 years back, 50 years back, 30 years back, it's the same bias. And we suffer from the same bias every point in time.
Every point.
Yeah. See, the biggest bias I see is it has been around narrative. And we buy into narratives. If you see the bull market of 95 to 2000, the narrative was that other than digital, nothing will work. And if you actually go and do a study of that period, you will find out that the stocks, the companies which were giving 30% EPS CAGR also underperformed the index at that point in time.
Okay. So
the narrative, so currently there is a narrative about few stocks, that these are the only stocks we should be buying because these are the only stocks which have worked for last 4 years. And our market has shown that when the narratives change, and when they change, the returns can be really dismal for multiple years. So that's one bias I've always found has remained with people. Second bias has been around the, what I call the sunk cost fallacy, or maybe what is called as anchoring bias. So it's about And it's also the reason why you create value traps. No, because if you buy a stock at some certain price and the stock has fallen 70-80%,
right,
sometimes we are anchored that we are losing 80% rather than looking at that what has inherently happened to that company. So rather than getting anchored with the stock price at which we are biased and getting, so the price which you bought is a sunk cost. So that we need to remember that the price which we bought is a sunk cost, and the current amount value which we are getting in the market, that's the value of that investment.
Right.
And we have to look at the stocks not according to where we bought, but according to the fundamentals today. So that is another bias, I would say. And third big bias has been the confirmation bias. You know, so it's about how to look at data. And if you look at the bulls in the market, they will even look at this pandemic data and say that our recovery rate is highest in the world, and that's why it's very positive. If you think through the bears, they'll say that, you know what, we are still giving highest number of cases in the world, and that's why the market should not be where it is. So people want to look at, they don't want to look at the full data. They want to look at the data which suggests their own philosophy. So I think these are three key biases which I would want to avoid.
Right. And, you know, we looked at the investment bias, and I think next question is a very interesting one and probably relate to it. Well, there's a new movie on the Harshal Mehta scam, which is coming up, you know, in the month of October. So what are the key learnings for investors, you know, from the scam? I know it was actually not just one scam, but a bundle of scams which happened at the same point in time.
So one of the things I would say there is that you can, I would really think that scam, you can learn if you actually read through or go through that entire scam, that the amount of learning which it gives you, when it is much higher than, and I think how much regulators would have learned from that particular scam,
right,
will be much more than what they could learn from what happened in the market for multiple years. So it was, in a way, it was a brilliant scam, because the guy didn't only scam, pushed up the prices in the market. He also used the banking system to the full extent without putting his own money, how to use the banking system, how to push up the prices. This is really, really, and you have seen multiple sort of level of reforms happening even in the banking sector,
right,
to take care of those loopholes in the system. So what we can learn as investors, because I don't want to get into what banking sector can learn, because they had their own learnings and they did what they could to plug the loopholes.
Right.
As an investor, what you can really learn is that we keep on hearing that market knows all, and the stock, I forgot that word which I always hear from the market, because it's almost like that whatever is the stock price is right. It's something around that. So we should not get into that trap, that stock prices, market is efficient and stock market knows everything. I don't know if you remember that ACC was one of the stocks. It was a very good company at that point in time. Also, still a good company. But that was the stock where the prices were moved up maybe, I think, a few hundred times in a matter of just around 60 days.
Okay.
So it doesn't matter what the company is and what the stock price is. You should not buy it just into a story, a narrative, just because the stock price is going up. So I think this is the biggest learning for investors, that be fundamental, read what's going around with the company, rather than just look at the stock price and the stock price chart and start investing into it.
Right, I'm sure. And all these lessons are very relevant in today's market environment as well. And it was a great chat, Mr. Singh. And thank you so much for your time, and listeners for tuning in to this edition of Special Podcast. But do still log on to moneycontrol.com for more on news, business and economy. Again, thank you so much for your time, sir.
Thanks, Chitesh.